Okay, just 1 minute. Okay, good morning, everyone. What I'd like to talk to you about today is what we've been doing to reduce pesticide and water movement in container nursery systems. And some of this will be work that led up to what we're doing in Water 3, and then the rest will be results from where we've been in the Water 3 project. I'd like to start out by thanking all of the people that have helped with this. This is not an individual effort. There's been a lot of people involved over many years. And then we've also had quite a few funding sources, so thanks also to our funding partners. So we all know how water comes into nurseries. It's either coming in primarily through precipitation or irrigation. There may be some other minor ways that water gets in, but that's pretty insignificant. And also, when water comes in through irrigation or precipitation, especially in container production, we have quite a bit of non-target area where the water can hit. And a nice study that was done back in the early 90s by Beeson and Knox showed that as you increase your plant spacing, you also decrease the amount of ground or land covered by containers. So even when plants are spaced container tight, you have over 80% or over 80% of the, or 20% of the land is open, non-target. And then that decreases down to, or increases up to having 75% of the land not covered by your crop or by your container. We can mitigate that a little bit by going to individual plant irrigation, such as spray stake or drips. You can see that there is some overspray in some cases, and you might have other things that lead to loss of water, but it's pretty minimal when we go to these individual plant systems. One of the problems with the individual plant systems is you have all of these tubes running throughout your nursery, and Damon can tell you how much fun that is walking through with a sprayer and applying pesticides. We know water outflows from nurseries are primarily, or we thought, primarily from surface runoff, so our systems are designed to provide good drainage. Both the substrates and the beds are graded so that we have fairly rapid drainage of water, and most of that we thought was going through surface or exiting through surface, and that can depend a little bit by your ground cover system. Once it leaves from the surface water sources, it can have pretty rapid impact on surrounding ecosystems, such as this nursery, that the water pretty much will quickly drain right into that river system surrounding it. We can also do one of our R's. We can try to recycle this. So this is a nursery where they're capturing a large portion of their runoff water, surface runoff water, and reusing it. But also, water does go through and infiltrates below our production surface, and so we can't ignore that part, and that's one of the things we wanted to do with our experimental nurseries that we have both in Michigan and in, at Virginia Tech with Jim. Your ground cover can affect where the water moves. Non-compactable rock or fabric over sand is going to have a lot more infiltration than something like a compactable rock that will form a more solid surface or a fabric over a clay surface. So that will affect how water moves through the operation. So keep that in mind when you see our results. We were doing kind of the worst case scenario, fabric over sand. Now this is an eye test for Charlie. I know he likes these kind of graphs. This is not to show you the data in particular, but this is one of our earlier projects that led to what we're doing with Water 3. And this is 3 years of data with 20-some species of plants. And basically what we're doing, our typical treatments were to have a control of 19 millimeters, that's 3/4 inch per acre per day, and then irrigating based on plant daily water use or crop evapotranspiration. So either at 100% or with two deficit treatments. And what we found through all of that work is we could reduce our irrigation rates by scheduling irrigation based on plant use rather than a set amount of time, anywhere between 18 and 74% depending on the plant species. And we've done that for around 40, 45 different species to date. This is also an eye test for you, not to show you the details, but to show you kind of the general trend. Most of the growth, this is the growth index over a season. Most of the growth, you can each of these squares is a different species, and most of the growth is not significant, so there's no difference in the growth index. The ones with the red circles, there are differences in growth, and if your eyes are really good, you'll notice that the filled circles are the control, and the control is the lowest, the control is the lowest, the control is the lowest. So we're getting, if anything, less growth when we irrigate at that higher irrigation rate. So not only do we save water, but we get better growth in some cases. We did have two or three species that did perform better with that higher irrigation rate, but most of them, about 90% of them, performed better with irrigating based on their water use. And this is just a shot of a couple of the crops. So you can see they are full-grown, mature plants and marketable. And here's one where we do see the control with less growth and less flowering than the plant water use treatments. We've also looked at runoff with these irrigation treatments. So again, the same thing, the control is this light blue. And the top, this is how much was irrigated. So it's pretty consistent, right? 19 millimeters per application. And these are various days throughout the season. The darker blue is how much was irrigated at 100% water use. And then this was one of the deficit irrigations at 75%. So you can see we are reducing the amount of irrigation applied, but more importantly, or as important, we are substantially reducing the amount of runoff. So the filled part of these bars is how much water left in surface runoff from the beds. And then kind of to summarize several of the studies over a couple of years, this is a more holistic look at a seasonal extrapolation. So we're looking at kiloliters per hectare. For the control, we're getting around 22,000 kiloliters per hectare of irrigation applied, and then much less, 67% of the control, with the 100%, 58% with the deficit, and then 53% if we have 2 days of deficit irrigation. This is the runoff. So again, this first column of percentages is comparing the runoff with the amount applied. The second column of percentages is comparing this runoff with the controls runoff. So we're reducing, we're having 48% of the control runoff with 100% daily water use. Only 30% of the control runoff with the deficit treatments. And then we also looked at nitrogen and phosphorus movement, and again we see nice decreases in the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus leaving the system in the runoff water. So that takes us to our Water 3 project, and this is one of the parts of it. This is our what we call our raised bed study. These are beds that consist of the bottom layer is native soil, about a foot of that. On top of that is a pond liner, and then on top of the pond liner is sand. And then we cover that with a landscape fabric. Both the native soil and the sand is graded to the middle and then down to one end of the bed. At those low points, we install a port at the very top so we can get the runoff water, and then a port at the base of the pond liner so that we can get the water that infiltrates through that 1 foot. Collect that in these tanks, and then of course we have our nursery crops sitting on top of that. Okay, our irrigation treatments for 2017, we wanted to go a little more extreme and get out of just overhead, so we included spray stake irrigation as our treatments. We have our traditional control rate, sorry about that, our traditional control of 19 millimeters a day. That ends up to be like 19 liters per meter squared per day. Our spray stakes, we also used a traditional grower rate of 2 liters per day. Again, these are 3 gallon or number 3 containers, and that's 4.4 liters per day. And Amy Fulcher was asking me earlier, why is that so much different? Well, remember, we're only irrigating the containers now. We're not irrigating the non-target spaces. So a lot less water just from going to that. And then our spray stake at a set point, we had a set point where if the water was the container substrate, so this was using sensors, was below 35%, the irrigation turned on and returned the plants to container capacity and then turned off. So basically we were trying to get as close to a zero leaching irrigation as possible with that system. So that's the water in. Of course, there was precipitation as well. This is the water out. The top part is the runoff. The bottom part is how much infiltrated below the production surface. And then the color scheme will be the same throughout the next couple of slides. The green is the overhead treatment. The red is the spray stake at 2 liters per day. And the blue is the spray stake with the set point irrigation. And then bottom, you'll see black bars, and that is the precipitation. So one thing to notice is that we almost always have less runoff occurring for the spray stake treatments. And they're very close to each other, a few little differences. And another important thing is to notice the infiltration. So we're getting significant infiltration, almost as much infiltration as we get runoff. So by just looking at runoff, we've been missing a large part of the picture of how pesticides and nutrients are moving throughout the system. Another thing to notice is we get a lot more infiltration with the spray stake systems than we do runoff. And that, if you'll look closely, follows the precipitation. So the infiltration that we're getting is mainly because we're getting infiltration over the entire surface rather than an infiltration through the pot and then through the sand. This summarizes, so for 32 of the days during the season, we have about 100 and some day season, we did collect runoff and infiltration in those large tanks. We got about 190 liters per square meter for the overhead, and then substantially less for both the spray stake treatments. And the top, the numbers are, represent how much water was applied during those 32 days. Now, also notice in the spray stake, the blue spray stake, anywhere from 0 to 168 liters, that doesn't make any sense, does it? Well, we have still have to dig into this data, but when we applied the spray stake based on set point, there were some days where we applied zero irrigation. And so we get basically zero runoff. Okay, so that range is just based on without going through the data with a fine-tooth comb yet. So we'll be modifying that to show you what we actually did apply for the set point spray stakes. And this is the infiltration. You can see we get much more infiltration with the spray stake treatments than we do runoff. And we also get about the same amount of runoff and infiltration for the overhead systems. So again, we're missing half of where the water's moving if we only look at runoff, especially with overhead systems. Well, actually more especially with spray stake systems. And this is just a combination of the both. So we are getting more water moving off-site with the spray stakes than we apply. Again, that's primarily because of precipitation. The spray stakes at 2 liters per day, we're getting 57% of the water moving off-site than we did with overhead irrigation, and 42% compared to overhead with the set point spray stake. Okay, let's look at the pesticide. So pesticide inputs are very similar to water, right? It's broadcast over the entire production surface. It can be, whether it's granular or spray applied, liquid applied, it's still broadcast over the entire surface. It misses the target just like irrigation water does. And you can see it in between the pot spaces as well. You turn on the water and now we start having some differences. So the differences in how, well, maybe I should put the slides in different order, but these are some things that can decrease pesticide movement, right? We can have some things increase it, right? If we have irrigation, overhead irrigation, or rainfall, we're going to wash pesticides off of the plant. We're going to start pushing it down into the soil profile. We can increase leaching, surface runoff, groundwater, infiltration. So all of those things can increase pesticide movement. These activities or these functions decrease pesticide movement. Photodecomposition, volatilization, plant uptake. You'll notice almost all of the ones that involve decreasing pesticide movement are better the longer we leave the pesticide where it is. So the longer we can delay irrigating with overhead systems, or if we can use deficit irrigation, the less we're going to move those pesticides. If we can use under canopy systems, spray stakes or drip systems, we're going to reduce that very substantially. One thing we really need to know, and you'll see, we need a better understanding of how these compounds adsorb to plastics. And that's really one of the big holes that we're missing with where we can, some of the conclusions we can draw. Some of the factors affecting pesticide movement, irrigation practices, we talked about weather and climate, can't do much about. The pesticide chemical properties, definitely we can do something about that, right? Selecting chemicals, not just based on how they control our pests, but it might become more and more important to select them based on the properties and how they move in our systems. Pesticide formulations, granular is going to move differently than suspended particles or dissolved pesticides. So let's look at our pesticide treatments for 2017. So we did three time periods during the year. We did, we're only going to talk about the first two, well, not even that. We're going to talk about a few of the pesticide examples. Our irrigation treatments, again, the same that I was talking about for our runoff and infiltration work. This is from the same area. Let's look at a couple examples of the pesticides. So I picked pesticides based on differences in their chemical properties. If we look at oxyfluorophen, very low solubility, relatively high adsorption coefficients, and then a really long half-life. So look at where it goes. We have relatively small amounts moving, concentration-wise, moving in runoff. Our load, it's interesting and unfortunate that we're still analyzing this data. A lot of times you'll find a high concentration, but you'll end up finding a low load, because remember, we're moving a lot less water. So it ends up concentrating, but the load is low. Now, concentration is important because of biological reactivity. Load is important based on what it does to other water bodies. Okay, this is infiltration, much, much less, which is what we'd expect with the properties of this pesticide. It's almost nothing moving in the into infiltration or below the production surface, and our loads are very low. So here's our total for infiltration. Here's our total for our total loads for runoff, and then our total overall. Okay, so we're getting mostly moving in runoff, and a lot of it's coming in the first 4 days. Very little infiltrating below the production surface. Runoff concentration is usually higher for the overhead than the spray stakes, and no difference between the spray stake treatments. Load was always higher for the spray stakes. Let's look quickly at chlorpyrifos, a little bit more soluble, very high adsorption coefficients, similar half-life, kind of looks a little bit similar to oxyfluorophen in the concentrations, but look at the loads that we're getting. So a little bit higher in our loading, and then infiltration slightly higher. So no big surprises there. So kind of the same thing. Mostly moving in runoff, a little bit more than oxyfluorophen. Same type, more concentration in the overhead. And then the load was always higher for the overhead than for the spray stakes. Okay, here's the weird one. Okay, this is acephate, very soluble. 818 milligrams per liter is incredibly high. Probably only Roundup is higher. Very low adsorption coefficients. The half-life is debatable. And look at where it's moving. Okay, so we have pretty high concentrations. We're still working on this data. And look at our loads. We've got really huge loads moving off in the runoff. Here's the big difference. It looks the same in the infiltration. So really large concentrations and loads for all of the treatments. Okay, there were differences between them, but it's moving pretty rapidly through this system. We also find it moving at 16 days. The half-life of this in soil, as you can see, is 3 days, so there's maybe something going on with the half-life. This is just a summary of all the pesticides we've looked at, but the important part of this is the solubilities. This is the product per acre that the label recommends to apply. This is how much that is in grams per hectares. This is how much we recovered in grams per hectares. And this is the percent that we recovered. So you can see acephate, 13 to 54%, huge amounts. Isoxaben, another and surprising large amount. Chlorpyrifos, another fairly large one. So with that summary and conclusions, this is all about reducing. We can reduce the amount of water applied by improving irrigation scheduling, reduce the amount of water loss by irrigation scheduling and spray stake irrigation, reduce infiltration losses with spray stake, probably, and then reduce our nutrient losses with improving irrigation scheduling and reduce our pesticide runoff with and infiltration with spray stake irrigation. We need to understand these pesticide properties as we're selecting them to apply. And generally low or high solubility, low adsorption means greater movement, but there are exceptions. We really need to understand what plastic is doing in our systems. There's obvious challenges with spray stake or drip irrigation. And acephate is more persistent than found in other literature. So with that, we have no time for questions. And I will let Sarah take over. Thank you.